So we left off on the artifact creature discussion, right? And the and then we're going to go on to talk about the really broken parts of that section.
Quote unquote equipment.
Your mileage may vary. considering that we already talked about the sword, so you know a lot of people would include those in there as well. Do you want to start with something we forgot to mention equipment wise? Skull clamp.
Yeah. So shame on us.
Yeah.
I left on purpose because I actually love that card. So.
Oh yeah, sorry Arthur. Yeah. Of course, we did not forget it. It was on purpose.
It's probably one of the first cards I played in a competitive deck, the standard with the affinity.
Oh man.
So I don't know if you ever played that card in stand when it was legal in standard, but
I did not.
In the days of cranial plating.
No, it was just before cranial plating.
Yeah. I remember you could play whatever you want as long as you played Skullclamp.
The best card with it was actually Arcbound Worker.
Yeah.
Because you get to draw two cards and get the +1/+1 counter on your affinity creature, and maybe drain one life if you had your Disciple of the Vault in play. This deck was nuts. Really.
If I remember correctly, at some point the deck was playing Second Sunrise because you were almost able to combo your opponent out.
I'd never played it like that, but I was actually starting playing Magic, so it was probably not the best version possible.
Okay, I saw some deck lists from around that time, and it was nuts. But the question is, Skullclamp had to be banned in Standard, it's banned in Modern, it's banned in Legacy, so why the hell should people cube with it?
Because it's obviously really good.
Because it's awesome.
Awesome was the word I was looking for. I think.
The thing with Skullclamp is you can throw it into basically any aggro deck and it will do really good work for you. But you can actually build around this. Just abuse it. And it's not even really difficult. You just need lots of small token producers, really.
Yeah.
And you can just rip through your deck at an alarming rate just for one mana a go, just by sucking tokens to it, basically. And it's really crazy. And the ceiling on this card, in my personal opinion, is actually higher than nearly every other equipment. Maybe not Umezawa's, but certainly the swords. This can at times outperform them.
Yes, I agree with that. The thing about this is it unbeatable? Because I think the answer is no.
No, it's not unbeatable. But,
so, how can people try to beat it?
Just blowing it up is one way. Like the same with the swords. Yeah. Okay. It's inherently very, very vulnerable. It's probably the most vulnerable and cheapest to destroy permanent type as an artifact. There's ways of dealing with the creature as well before you put the skull clamp on. I mean, that's limited in. What you can do, obviously, because the equip cost is so low. But once a Skullclamp, deck featuring Skullclamp, I hesitate to call it a Skullclamp deck in cube because it's a randomized deck. But once it gets going, it's very hard to beat the card advantage that you get. So you've really got to try and shut that down.
Yeah. But the thing about Skullclamp, in my opinion, at least, is it's such a fun card.
Yes.
The thing is, I love playing that card. But it's one of those cards that I actually don't mind losing against. Would you guys agree with this?
Yes, it's not that unfair.
No, it kind
of is.
I mean, I'm not saying it's not it's a fair card actually, but the way you play it is not as unfair as other. I mean, I don't mind losing against that because...
Yes, that's the point. I agree.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how to explain it.
I kind of get what you're saying. I mean, against a deck in a sealed, or, sealed is the wrong word, in a constructed format, where you're specifically designing the deck to abuse Skullclamp, then
yes,
that feels really degenerate. But when it happens organically, it's not so bad. And a lot of the time, when I use Skullclamp, I'm just chucking it on a 2-2, attacking as a 3-1, and hoping that someone blocks it and gives me some cards.
Yeah.
And that's the majority of what happens with it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And sometimes the best way to deal with Skullclamp is just get the damage. And
sure, yeah, don't block the creature.
That's sometimes the best way.
Yeah, that's actually probably the way I usually deal with Singers on the other side. If my opponent doesn't have an infinite source of 1-1s, and typically people don't, because, magic is magic and not just theory crafting. And actually, when you're attacking with a creature, you just let it through. It speeds up the aggro deck's clock.
Yeah.
So you treat it like a shuko, like a plus one plus naught. which would have made it this, the famous story.
When I think about Skullclamp, shuko is the card that comes to mind.
not just me.
Yeah, the thing about that's what I think you have a point, is that it happens organically. And it's so much fun. I mean, it is.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mind losing to Skullclamp, honestly.
But
I understand.
But you love winning.
Yes, I could. To be fair, I'm trying to think. I don't think I ever drafted Skullclamp. I never saw it as well, to be frank. But, so I still have to win a draft with Skullclamp. But it's so much fun. I mean,
I do pick this very highly.
Yeah.
I mean, I if I see it, it's probably going in my deck. You know, the decks I like to draft as well. What's in your opinion sort of the most the best cards to combo with Skullclamp in the cube? If you want to, do something degenerate other than just making your creatures into 3-1s and swinging.
Young Pyromancer.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Any Elspeth?
My personal favorite is Ophiomancer.
Oh yeah, one is good as well.
Yeah, you get rid of your token, you get two cards, and then you make another one fresh to block in your opponent's turn, which is
you want another one?
Go for it.
Meloku.
Oh
on
yeah.
Control deck.
Yes.
Self-clamping control.
Yeah.
Card advantage.
So, yeah, Skullclamp, I think we don't have to make the case either for or against Skullclamp. So, let's move ahead. Next on our list, Umezawa's Jitte.
Yeah.
That's a Planeswalker, right?
It's almost a Planeswalker. So,
okay.
It was not banned in Standard, but it is banned in Modern.
It used to be played... people used to play four of them, even if they didn't play creatures, just to destroy them.
Just as removal.
If Manriki Guzari still has any pedigree as a magic card, is because it was one of the best answers to Jitte.
Now it's the best answer. Before
Jitte
was the best answer to Jitte.
Yes, I know. So, Umezawa's Jitte. So... it costs 2. It costs 2 to equip. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage, you can put put 2 charge counters on Jitte. You can remove 1 charge counter from Jitte and do one of 3 things. You can give target creature -1/-1 until end of turn. You can gain 2 life. Or what's the other one?
You can equip creature
gets
2/+2.
Yes, that's it. So
and equip 2.
Yeah, I said that on the beginning, think. Probably. But if I didn't, equip 2. So this card is pretty good, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, they actually put this in a precon for God knows why. You imagine those precons, which are supposed to be of equal power level, you land this thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Impossible to get it. Actually, the precon, if I remember correctly, costs around
13 euros or something.
No, it was a bit more expensive.
Okay.
But even though it was almost as expensive as a GT at that time, so people bought all the precons they could get, and you could get some rats with it.
Yeah.
And rat ninjas.
I mean, this still happens today. I mean, just look at Mind Seize and the debacle with True Name Nemesis.
Yeah.
At the beginning, I was just absolute nonsense.
I think they are getting better at it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, they double printed that one afterwards, so you know they make an effort and they're doing okay.
But Arthur.
We also had the trouble with Stoneforge Mystic when it happened.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So the thing about GTA is, it does everything. It does not prepare you a coffee, but apart from that, it makes everything you want.
Yeah, I believe I may be wrong about this. So I believe the story that came out of the development was that the life gain is added really late in development. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think
they were like, this card isn't good enough because apparently we didn't play test it at all.
Let's
put life gain on it.
Actually, I think there was a recent article on Daily MTG. If true, I will link it. I think one of the abilities was a ritual ability of some sort.
Wow. Okay.
So it was better.
No, not necessarily. Because I don't know the details. I will look for it and link it if my memory is not tricking me. But so, sell me on GTA.
Oh man, I mean, once you get the first two counters on it, it just kind of gets out of control.
Pedro.
Okay.
Yeah, you can explain.
You have three options. You can survive if you're low in life. So you don't lose against burn decks and that kind of decks.
Okay.
You can destroy creatures, so you don't have to lose against zoo or aggro decks.
Yeah.
Or you can kill your opponent quite fast with only one creature just by pumping your creature and kill him fast. So whatever you want, whatever you need.
Fair enough.
is that enough?
It is. One neat trick with GTA is when you have a creature with double strike.
Oh yeah.
I've yet to do that actually.
Yeah.
Oh, you can move the counters to pump it before the second strike. Yeah.
Yeah. You deal damage in the first strike. I don't want to get into details, but you deal the first strike damage, you get two counters, and you still have a window on which to pump your own creature.
So prophetic flamespeaker basically is combo.
Yeah. Yes, sure. But also some very interesting stuff about GTA is that the -1/-1 ability is really, really great because it gets around very nasty cards as Mother of Runes, all the protection.
True Name Nemesis.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No.
You can target.
Oh, no.
You cannot target
True
Name Nemesis.
Yeah,
no.
Sorry about that. I was too eager to...
I was too excited.
To name broken cards.
But I think Mother of Runes is a very good example for it.
It is.
Really
even the life gain, which looks, you know, at first glance it looks like the weakest, is just so useful against the aggro mirror. It's just crazy. I mean, it takes you out of range immediately. It's mad. It's just so good.
The big problem with GTA is that two charge counters is too much. Two is too much. I mean...
Yeah. So, to finish our trilogy of broken equipment, aka the Stoneforge Mystic package, we have its partner in crime, Batterskull.
Ah, that's not broken.
Because when they were designing New Phyrexia, they actually said, I think we need to print something to give some juice to that deck. So
because the swords, were not good enough, right?
Yeah.
With swords,
yeah, they wanted to find a use for its activated ability, I guess.
So,
the
Batterskull, it costs 5. It costs 5 to equip, and it has an extra ability. You can pay 3 to return it to your hand. Equipped creature gets +4/+4, and lifelink and vigilance. The thing is...
Only?
No! It actually enters the battlefield. When it enters the battlefield, you put a 0/0 germ token into play and you attach Batterskull to it. So, yeah, it's good.
Yes.
It's good. So, from the 3, I think Batterskull, in queue, Batterskull is pretty fair. As long as cards can be fair in cube.
I mean, yeah, I have been horribly, horribly murdered by this on a number of occasions. actually, most times by Thran the Last Troll with a Batterskull on his head.
But you have to say one more thing, is that if you pay 3, you can return it to your hand.
Didn't I say that? I think...
No.
Yeah, maybe I didn't. Okay,
I thought you did. But yes, you can pay 3 to return it to owner's hand, so you can then play it again and get another 4/4.
If they try to destroy it, for example.
Yeah.
In some cases, it may even be worth it if you don't have any creature to equip it, just to return it to your hand. If you need the immediate lifelink blocker, for instance.
Yeah.
Maybe. I
mean, sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, one fun story about that is I hear a lot of people saying, well, they should unban Stoneforge Mystic in Modern.
No,
it's not that good it's very good in Legacy, but it should be playable. And just one thing is that Batterskull is a really great card, and people play it just for the 5 mana cost.
Yes,
think
I agree.
Of it on turn 3, uncontrollable because of the ability.
The thing about that is sometimes, just for a quick aside, people... When they needed to ban Punishing Fire in Modern, people said, speculated if they would ban Grove of the Burn Willows or Punishing Fire, and they correctly decided to ban Punishing Fire because Grove of the Burn Willows is actually a fine jewel land in Modern.
You ban the enabling card, the broken part of the duo, not the fair part.
And Grove of the Burn Willows sees a lot of play in Modern.
Yeah.
So yeah, Batterskull by cube standards it's pretty fair.
I mean, it's the impact you want and expect from a 5 mana cost.
Well, but
I agree. Yeah.
Even when you say it's fair, it's normally it's a very high pick.
Absolutely. It's first pickable.
Exactly.
It's colorless, so that makes it first pickable.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But I can
think
of other 80 cards that are first pickable. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but yeah, you know my point.
I know, but I mean, it's a very good card, even if it's fair card for cube.
Yeah.
One thing about Batterskull that was kind of bothered me from a flavor standpoint is why it has vigilance and not trample. I mean, it's especially I really like the promo art for this card.
The GP promo art.
Yeah, it's absolutely awesome. But it always looks like a kind of big trample. I can understand lifelink. He's got a big pair of teeth, and maybe it just kind of munches down creatures and turns them into Phyrexian noms, but...
This is one of those cases of oozes wearing boots, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
Could they have chosen... is the art at odds with the abilities? Yes.
I mean, I can get, but Vigilance is kind of a weird one.
Arthur,
I guess Vigilance makes it also really good, though.
Yeah. Arthur, which one of us is the flavor judge?
You're level 3 flavor judge, man.
We need to get some flavor judge online. Maybe next time. So, this, I think... Is there any other broken equipment we are forgetting?
Not broken, but I think there were... I don't remember if we discussed them. There were 2 other equipments.
I think we covered all of them.
Did we talk about Bone Splitter?
Yep.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we did.
Lightning Greaves?
We did talk about Lightning Greaves. I don't recall talking about Bone Splitter, but maybe we did.
I think we did a very, very short. There's not that much to say. And just
yeah,
as
that's
a kind
true.
Of like pick, I think we did say something about that.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost like Skull Clamp. Unless you don't draw cards. Right.
Moving
yes.
on.
We're forgetting about Shuko. Come on with him.
Dude, I played that for a time.
I know. Shuko is almost decent what's the other one? Silvok Lifestaff?
Yeah, they're both really good friend equipment. Shuko, because you can equip it for free, so it's absolutely great in the aggro mirror.
Yeah.
You've always got it on attack and defense as well, especially with first strikers and stuff. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Actually, I think I mentioned this on a previous episode, but I'm really a fan of Silvok Lifestaff because it gives a chip bonus to your attacking creatures. The fact that you gain life when a creature dies means you break the aggro mirror in half.
Yeah, I can see that being amazing in that deck.
And it's also, in my opinion, this is also the missing puzzle for the mono black decks in Cube. Or at least black based decks in Cube.
Do you think so?
I do. I do, because you lose a lot of life with Thoughtseize and all the other cards that make you lose life.
Yeah, there are a ton of them.
A ton of them, yeah. Yeah. You can almost kill yourself.
That's why it's called suicide.
So, but there are not a lot of good black cards that give you that your life back.
That's true.
I think this is one of them. I honestly do.
I like your point. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I'm not saying it's pretty fringe. But I think it's one of those cards that it does a lot more than for Cube than people assume it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I mean, it was played in freaking Coblade at some point.
I gotta say, three life on a dice trigger is a hell of a lot. So
yeah. So I think this wraps up our equipment discussion. We will have to cut this episode short a bit because hopefully you guys are not noticing this, but we are having lots of problems with our recording today.
If you don't notice this, it's thanks to Pedro and his
mad skills.
No, not mad skills at all.
Ah, come on.
I just clicked some buttons. And the thing is, the internet, the recording problems are also on my end. So it cancels each other. Checks and balances again, guys. Come on. We are going to give you a short episode this time. But before we go, we will discuss some of our favorite Build Around Me cards. Artifact Build Around Me cards. So I guess we just take turns. We did for the gold cards the other day.
Wait a minute, Petro.
Yeah.
We're missing some artifacts and...
We are, yeah. Good point, Arthur. Since we are cutting the episode short, we will leave the discussion about the Moxen, Black Lotus, Soul Ring...
And all the creatures as well.
And the artifact creatures for another time, as well as the discussion on the artifact deck. We will get back to that in the future, maybe with some guests. But for today, we will just keep it at this. We discussed the good, broken, something, equipment. And we will talk about Build Around Me cards. Actually, I talk about this a bit, if you guys remember episode 6, when we had Jan van der Vecht on, we touched a bit on this. I think you need to have some Build Around Me cards in Cube, because in my opinion, it increases the draftability, if that's a word, of your cube. Because you can draft your cube 30 times, but in the 31st, you see that, I mean, say, Isochron Scepter, and you decide, this is the day I try it. And my, and, the artifact section is a great place to have those cards. Because since they are colorless, they get in so much, in so many decks, it makes them worth it. So, I think we just, we can just take turns discussing them. Liam, I want you to start on Mimic Vet, because I know you want to.
Oh,
you want me to? I thought I was going to get to pick my own card. I was getting ready for my my massive monologue on Smokestack there. So,
okay.
No, it's okay. I can talk on
Mimic. Liam, I have a problem with you. Don't choose my cards, please.
Okay.
So, you talk about Smokestack. I'll talk about Mimic
Vet. No, no. Just talk about it, please.
No, it's cool. I love Mimic Vet. Okay, I'm gonna go with Mimic Vet now.
No.
It's kind of a fringe card. You don't really see it a lot of 360s, do you?
I don't know. I think some 360s play it.
Yeah, mine's one of them. So this card costs 3, and it's got imprint. Whenever a non-token creature is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you may exile that card. If you do, return each other card exiled with Mimic Vet to its owner's graveyard. So you can have one at a time. Pay 3, tap, put a token onto the battlefield that is a copy of the exiled card. It gains haste. Exile it at the beginning of the next end step. So this card is really, really cool to build around. It's typically going to go in a mid-range deck where you've got a lot of really strong, you know, ETB effects. You get more bang for your 3 mana if you've got something like a Titan or some Acidic Slime on it or something like that.
Acidic Slime is a good one. I was going to say Shriekmaw.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, any of those guys. Or Necrotal or whatever. Anything that produces tokens, which will, of course, remain on the battlefield.
Yeah.
A Thragtusk is absolutely ridiculous. Hornet Queen is pretty cool.
Remind me pretty quickly. Does it exile or do you sacrifice the token?
No, you exile the token at the end of the next set.
Yeah. But it still triggers Thragtusk.
It triggers Thragtusk. He's about the only one because for some reason he hasn't got a dice trigger. He's got a leaves the battlefield trigger.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is, but that is the case.
Because they wanted it to be good against Vapor Snag, I think.
And it was in standard with Restoration Angel as well.
Also. Yeah.
So I guess they wanted to blink it or something, but... I mean, Mimic Vet's just really hilarious because, you know, you can get targets from your opponent's side of the board as well. So this doesn't have to be something that you've played. And of course you can activate this as an instant, so you can drop something as a surprise blocker. And
it's not that much of a surprise blocker because it shouldn't be.
Maybe it's just my fiance, but she seems to forget something like that.
Poor Haley. Yeah. Don't be mean, Liam. Come on.
The great thing
is that you can imprint one of your opponent's creature.
Yeah.
And that actually, one of the last times I played my cube, we ended up building my buddy and I both a green-black mid-range deck with a lot of enter the battlefield abilities, and it was actually very. We ended up in a board state really hard because he had Genesis and Acidic Slime and Mimic Vet in play.
Oh.
And I had, between my graveyard, battlefield, and my hand, I had Grave Titan, Wormcall Engine, the Deranged Hermit, and 2 or 3 more cards. And I just couldn't play them because I knew that... I knew that he had also Shriekmaw or stuff like that, so if he could kill one of them, he could get them back and play them against me.
Oh, yeah.
So it was really terrible situation.
Yeah.
I actually heard at some point ago, there was the Channel Fireball website, they were discussing underrated cards in Cube. I will try to find the link for the show notes. And Luis Scott Vargas was talked about Mimic Vet, saying he was drafting with Matt Ness, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked, what is this card doing here? Matt Ness said, draft it. If it's good, if it turns out to be good, you owe me a dollar. And the story goes, he drafted it, he played it main deck, he drew his opening hand.
Yeah.
He looked at Matt Ness and he threw him a dollar.
yeah, he didn't even need to clear house, he just gave him a dollar straight up. I love
yeah.
it. That's awesome.
That card is great.
Really. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it can be really slow at times. You know, if essentially six mana until it does something, but when it goes going, it's just so awesome. I mean, it's like a kind of, it's kind of the colorless Kiki Jiki that we wanted for Cube for a long time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really nice card, and it's, you can build around it, but you don't really have to actually.
With opposition also.
To be frank, Arthur, what is not good with opposition?
If I come back to that, I'll have a really clever
sure
answer.
Sure, there's something.
I can't think of one now.
Okay. So, Arthur, you're up next.
Okay, one of my favorite cards. Some people don't think... but we'll talk about it earlier. No. Some people put that card in blue. Well, I will say it's an artifact because I kind of have two of them. I would say a Crystal Shard and with it, Erratic Portal.
Yes!
With Crystal Shard, it's an artifact for three. You can play either three and turn it or blue and turn it. Untap it, sorry. And get to return target creature to its owner's end unless its controller pays one colorless mana. And Erratic Portal does exactly the same, but it costs four mana to enter the battlefield, and only by paying one and tapping in, you can get to return target creature to owner's end. So, how is that card that awesome?
Yeah.
Actually, you play it with your own creatures. You don't target your opponent's creature. Sometimes it happens when it taps out, but usually...
Arthur, let me just say real quick. Even if it does not tap out, it's a good way
yes.
to tax their mana. Mm,
yeah.
Although I agree
sure.
it's not the primary use of the card.
That's what the point I was trying to make is...
Okay.
It can be good with that way, but the best way is doing it on your own creatures with a lot of enter the battlefield abilities or like Thraxa, something that leaves you a token when they leave the battlefield or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you just choose not to pay one and you return it to your hand. So you can protect your creatures and you can do a ton of stuff with that.
Yeah, it's super awesome. Yeah. I think about the whole targeting your opponent's creature thing. If it said return target creature you control to its owner's hand.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be such a fan. I mean, the fact that your opponent has to be prepared for the ability, they almost have to leave two lands up,
that's
right?
That's true.
Not just one, but two, because you can do one at end of turn, then untap yours, and then do it again.
Sure.
So that's such a Philip. It really is amazing. And that has such a big effect on the whole game. Even if you don't really intend to use it on your opponent's creatures, if they give you the opportunity, you can really give them a massive tempo loss, which is super fun.
That's a fair point, yeah. And it's awesome with Sneak Attack.
Oh, yeah. I've never managed to do that in a game, actually.
When I wanted to, I was not able to. Much. I drafted them both together once.
That should be awesome, really, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you play Erratic Portal as well, Pedro?
Yes, I play both of them.
I only play Crystal Shard, and I played in my blue section. Typically, we don't want to pay the three.
I play Crystal Shard in my blue section and Erratic Portal as a colorless card.
Yeah. I would, yeah, that's how I would do it. I think Erratic Portal is like half a mana too expensive, I find, if you know what I mean.
Yes. I know what yes. you mean, but,
I mean, for 360, you, yeah.
It gives you some redundancy on that effect. And,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You only need colorless mana to operate with it.
Yeah, I can see it's certainly a very good card, and
because
it's not strictly
worse.
Because if you
are paying
three
colorless mana with a Crystal Shard to return a creature to your hand, it's a bit too much, I think. You really want
yes,
to
yes.
be paying one blue mana.
That's true. But I really think it's an edgy card for 360. Really
yeah.
on the edge. I'm not sure I would include it at 360.
Which one, sorry? Portal or Shard?
Erratic Portal.
Yeah, that's I'm
love
kind of
it.
In that boat, yeah.
But it's really on the edge because that's what you say. It's half a mana too expensive, probably.
I would love to see the same effect on a creature as a sort of, you know, a reproducible ability.
Well, that would be nice, yeah.
Waterfront Bouncer is kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, Waterfront Bouncer is a nice discard outlet as well.
And also
that,
it's good with... Well, with a lot of cards, but with it's a good way to use your Squee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
it's
that's
good with Gilded Drake.
Yes.
And stuff like that.
It's
yeah.
a very frustrating card, actually, Waterfront Bouncer. I mean, I've played
yes.
that for most of my cubed life. It's not there at the moment, but I would consider putting it back because it's awesome. But yeah, it's annoying.
Yeah.
Really is.
Well, so, Pedro.
I have a spicy one.
Okay.
Elixir of Immortality.
Oh.
God, I love this card. I was specifically requested by my playgroup to see if I could include this card. And I'm so glad I did it.
Yes.
You're going to have to make the case for me on this one.
Okay.
Yes, for me too, please.
It will... My drafters like to dirtle.
Okay.
Okay? They just like to dirtle around and equip Fist and Famine to Grizzlebrand and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just draft all the sweet cards and you think, how am I going to win this game? These are the type of decks where Elixir shines. I don't know if you guys saw the finals of the Pro Tour.
Yes.
The blue white deck from Ivan Floch. Its win condition was Elixir of Immortality. Basically, the fact that it gains you... Sorry, Arthur?
And the goats.
Oh, yeah, of course. Nyx Fleece Ram and Archangel of Thune. Yes, it was pretty awesome.
Sorry,
it's
but
kind of a...
he won two of the games with the... With the Nyx
Fleece Ram. Just sounds like a troll deck, I'm not gonna lie to you.
No, it was your straight up blue white deck.
Troll turbo fog deck, yeah.
He mulliganed to 6 against
yeah.
the green white aggro deck. And his 6 was 3 lands, 2 Nyx Fleece Ram, and 1 Archangel of Thune.
Oh no. Okay.
It was awesome.
But even I think the second game he won with it, with the bonus of Elspeth with the
he had an Elspeth emblem and he attacked with Nyx Fleece Ram for the win. Yeah.
and some tokens, but I mean he won 2 of out of 3 games in the finals with the Nyx Fleece Ram. So
yeah.
It was a 0-5.
We talked briefly about Nyx Fleece Ram in our Journey to Nyx review, actually.
We did. Yeah,
and my point still stands. He's an awesome card. But he falls on that category that helps to hose aggro decks, and
yeah,
you can't have too much cards on that category.
I would still pick him below Perimeter Captain, as if I was going to include a card for that.
Okay.
He's the one mana 0/4 from Worldwork, and he says he's got Defender, and whenever a creature you control with Defender blocks, you may gain 2 life. The fact he costs half the amount. And he's also a human soldier, which is relevant.
But, yes.
But okay, yeah, I mean, Nyx Fleece can hold a sword and boots
but
and all sorts.
Then again, Liam, you can't Enlighten Tutor for Perimeter Captain, and you can for Nyx Fleece Ram.
That's true, yes.
Sorry, I had to.
You can also naturalize an Nyx Fleece Ram as well.
Yes,
come on. are you going to spend your naturalize on that? Are you sure?
Yes, I am. Just to upset Pedro.
Let's stop talking about sheep and let's get back to Elixir of Immortality.
Okay.
So the thing is, it can have the same role it had on that standard deck of just giving you inevitability. The 5 life is relevant in some matchups, but sometimes you just have that amazing deck full of spells and you just want to do that all over again. And so yeah, I love this card. My playgroup loves it as well. Because, I mean, we like to dirtle.
I mean, this looks like a card for the Turbo Frog deck. I mean, is that an archetype that you've tried to enforce?
I never saw that deck on my queue. I run Moment's Peace. To be honest with you,
there's a really nice card for Turbo Frog that's not Moment's Peace. I think you're not going to mention it. It's called Constant Mists.
I think you were going to mention Cryptic Command.
Yeah, no, not so much. Yeah, that is also good.
Yeah, Constant Mists prevents all combat damage, and you can sacrifice a land for the buyback cost.
Buyback, yeah. No, that's the card that used to be in a lot of cubes, and I actually kind of have a sadistic streak in me that really likes playing Turbo Fog.
Yeah.
This is such a horrible deck to play against, but you know, I have dabbled with the idea of trying to enforce that deck in cube, and that actually Constant Mists is really...
You have to if all your basic lands are snow-covered lands, you have 2 additional cards that allow you to do that.
Okay.
I don't remember the names.
Me neither. I'm not so good on the...
You see, one artifact and one red enchantment.
Oh, the red enchantment's in that block, which is weird.
I don't remember the names. Sorry. You guys in the audience...
They're probably screaming out right now saying, is this, yeah.
We will...
Put it in the comments or in the show notes.
Because, I mean, we don't remember. But getting back to Elixir, yes, I love Turbo Fog as well. It's not an artifact I'd consider for cube, but it gives you better gifts and given piles.
Yes.
In some cases.
True.
And it's sweet on that Life from the Loam deck. If you feel like you have the risk of decking out. Maybe. I just love the card. It's a pet card. I mean,
Fair enough.
I think in a slightly larger cubes, it can be worth the shot to try it.
I think it's doing a very specific thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's for the deck that wants to go very long, maybe draw a ton of cards.
That's
avoid aggro.
Exactly the deck I'm thinking about.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Fair enough.
So yeah, let's maybe. Do you guys still want to give it another round?
I think Liam wants to talk about one card, right?
Oh yeah, let's give it another round.
Okay.
Liam, if you don't talk about Smokestack, I will.
All right. Well, I'm not going to make your life easy, am I? After that, Nyx Fleece Ram stuff. So I'm going to talk about Smokestack. So yeah, Smokestack costs. Hang on, I may find the Oracle text for this. Because it kind of doesn't bear any resemblance, I don't think. I'm just going to put it into Gatherer.
The From the Vault edition has the current Oracle text.
There we go. Okay, so it's an artifact that costs 4 colorless. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a soot counter on Smokestack. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player sacrifices a permanent for each soot counter on Smokestack. So the order of these things is very important. Yeah?
The thing is, when you have 2 or more triggers triggering at the same time, you get to choose the order they go on the stack.
Yes, and if you didn't know that, then you might well wonder what this was, because it wouldn't make much sense in that capacity. So the idea is you put your... The next time your turn comes around, you have the second trigger coming off first, And then you want the first trigger coming off second. So that you then, you sack zero permanents and then you put a soot counter on it, right?
Yeah.
And then in your opponent's second turn since you played it, they will then sack a permanent. And the next turn you'll sack one, then they'll sack two. So they're 3-1 down, yeah?
Yeah.
And there'll be 6-3 and the advantage becomes, linearly larger as you go from there. But this card is really, really, really slow. So it's another one of those examples of a really grindy mid-range card. It's a little bit like Mimic Vat in that respect, I guess. But this is really, really cool. And there's loads of ways to make it even more asymmetrical by sacking stuff that you want to die, like Apocrysites or tokens, stuff with Skull Clamp on it, to bring you back to earlier in the discussion. So yeah, it doesn't take long to actually see how this can be really abused. And it's very, very slow, and it sort of gives rise to a whole archetype known as stacks, where you want things like this and braids and recurring cards like, Bloodghast and the likes. Really fun.
That was, you were, again, in episode 6, we had Jan van der Vecht to tell us all about Smokestack. Because he just drafts it non-stop when the Magic Online cube is online. When he's not drafting Storm, to be fair.
I'm not really qualified to talk about Storm, but I certainly would like to think I am to talk about Smokestack, because I do try and get this card. I like my Black Aggro decks, and it's kind of cool in those as well.
Yeah.
It's just a game-ending, grindy, crushing way to get a win out when you've, kind of run out of gas. So, it's fun. I mean, do you guys have much of the same experience with this thing?
I never had the pleasure to play with it. Or against it, to be fair. But I just... It's on my bucket list to draft.
Well, I had...
Yeah, Arthur?
Oh, keep...
Okay.
Sorry, I thought you were
playing. I never had the pleasure to draft to draft it and to play either with it or against it. But it's on my bucket list. I want to draft a Smokestack Braids deck.
Oh, yeah.
Well...
I just want to...
It's not so hard to do. I mean, Braids and Smokestack go typically sort of mid-pack, I guess.
Yeah, but I never saw them. Had the chance. It's one of the downsides of having a larger cube.
Yeah, I can see that. When you're drafting a lot of people as well, it's unlikely to see all the cards that you want. But you don't always have to have them together. I mean, they work great on their own. Having both in play is a little bit overkill.
Yeah.
Very, very suicide black. But that's a cool card, and that's it's a classic from that block full of broken stuff. It's just nice nostalgia. So I've been playing for probably a couple of years at that point, I guess. Maybe a year when Ezra Saga came out, so
yeah.
It was all new to me.
Well,
yeah. So,
actually, I included a specific card to help support this archetype. And that's it, Reassembling Skeleton.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
The thing about Reassembling Skeleton is that it's pretty unassuming, but it's a huge role player in a lot of decks. We mentioned Skull Clamp previously.
Unassuming Skeleton.
Yeah.
Misread
it's good with it. It's good with it, yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
It's pretty good.
This is one of those cards that's kind of garbage on its own, but then you realize how many things it just works so well with.
Yeah.
I actually like that more than stuff like Squee, because the amount of times you have to discard Squee to get any value out of it is effectively 2, minimum, right?
But you can just play Squee as well.
An
infinite chump locker.
Yeah, this guy does that for a lot cheaper, and
you can just equip Squee with a Skull Clamp.
Oh, dick. Yes. Yes, you can.
Reassembling Skeleton is cheaper, but it enters the battlefield tapped, so it's not a good blocker.
Yes.
No, that's a valid point, yeah. No, he's not such a good blocker.
So, what do we have next? Arthur, I think you're up next.
Yes, I would say some cards, probably one of the cards people hate the most to play against. That would be Winter Orb.
Yes!
I thought so. I was
nice!
Say.
People will hate me, but...
No, they won't. We won't let them hate you.
I mean, Winter Orb...
Right?
Yes, right. I mean, it can be very good if you play... You can build around it... Well, there's two different decks where it fits a lot. One of those is a deck with a lot of mana artifacts, mana rocks, like, well, you don't really care for your mana to be tapped out, so yeah. You will still produce mana. And the other option, and one that I like a lot, is in the aggro decks.
Yes.
Where actually, you don't really care, because even if your spells are cheap, and you want your opponent not to be able to use their mana. So, that's an awesome card. People hate you when you play that, normally.
Yeah, I also really, really enjoy this card. In any aggro deck, it's just such a fantastic investment of two mana. When you're ahead on the board, all, like all these symmetrical cards, like Armageddon, I suppose with the exception of balance. But when you're ahead on the board and you play this, then it pretty much guarantees that it, you know, needs to be answered.
Yes, that's actually the point.
That's fair enough. So, is it my turn now?
I guess so.
Unless you have another use for Winter Orb.
We can suggest a reprint in a modern frame and a foil. Maybe that would be good, but...
I think they will do it sooner or later. They commission alternate art for it with when the Magic Online Cube came around.
It's beautiful as well.
It is, and I think it's just a matter of time.
I very much predicted this from the Vault 20. I was 100% sure it would be in there, but it was not to be, unfortunately.
Yeah, and then I thought it fitted with from the Vault Annihilation as well.
Yeah,
not well.
I mean, I kinda.
It would.
Not a terrible choice by any means.
I don't know, Mr. Gavin Verhey. If you are listening to us, please consider it for some future from the vault. I know you will. I mean, as far as I know, it will. As far as we know, it will come out next year's from the vault. You heard it here first, folks. This was just a bit of a cop-out while I thought of a card. I will cheat a bit and say Ankh of Mishra.
Nice.
So what does Ankh of...
Is it really a build around me card?
Black Vise? You want to talk about Black Vise?
Those two together, combine them.
Now, okay, so I'll... Fair enough. We discussed them previously. I will talk about the card I want to talk about.
Okay.
And I will cheat a bit. And I'm going to say World Knit.
Oh, okay. That was
yet
cool.
Again. So, I have... probably you guys run this as well, I think. And I can't stress how awesome this card is in practice.
Yeah, it's so wacky. It's so much fun.
It's not turning out to be overpowered, like you were afraid, Liam, a few episodes ago.
Yeah, I did say my concerns, but it's been very, very strong. But it's not, I don't think, game breaking.
Exactly, but it's such a fun card. Just so you remember, it's a recent card from Conspiracy. So you start the game with it face up on your command zone. And as long as you have all the cards drafted, either in your library or in your command zone, lands you control, tap for mana of any color. It's such a fun build around me card. It goes on any deck. So that's why I'm cheating and considering it a colorless card.
Yeah, I think it's got to be considered that.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is so much fun. a guy built this with, what was the deck? So, Oath of Druids, some random fatties. He had lots of his lands were... I don't remember if it was Rofella's or something. And the thing is, since he combined it with Oath of Druids, he had the win condition. Right there. Right. Because he was playing a bigger card, a bigger deck than his opponent's. Combo!
What's the combo? You've lost me, sorry.
Oath of Druids.
Yeah.
Okay, so he had lots of ways to... He had lots of removal. He had Awakening Zone.
Okay.
So he could at will control how many creatures he had in play.
Oh, nice.
So he just milled me out. I was playing a near creatureless deck, and he just nearly milled me out.
Yeah, it's you can do some crazy stuff with that card. Yeah.
The thing about Worldknit is you can do whatever you want. Worldknit for me is all it's the quintessential build around me card.
it's like sandbox mode.
Yeah.
If you know with regards to computer games, what that means is sandbox mode for cube.
Yes.
You know, just kind of go wild, do whatever you want, break the laws of physics. And I built a deck on CubeSheet to just out of my cube with Worldknit just for the lulz, really. Just to see what that looked like. And there was only really one card in there that I wouldn't have normally included if I'd had a choice. And that was Champion of the Parish. I didn't have too many humans in there, but it was a sort of aggro tempo thing.
Okay.
And it was just such a good deck, and I thought, wow, you know, I've made some in, you know, Paper Magic as well that have been really, really awesome. And it's fun. It's really fun. Yeah, I agree with you.
I was trying to, one of these days I was mock drafting my cube on Cube Tutor, and I opened pick one, Worldknit.
Yeah.
And I gave up by pick 7 because I was overwhelmed with all the possibilities.
Brain explodes.
It did. It actually did. But I can't stress this enough. If it is the only conspiracy I'm playing, but it's so worth it.
Well, at the Spanish conferences.
Yeah.
Church conferences. When we drafted my cube.
Yeah.
And one of the judges. He first picked it in the second.
Pick 2, pick 1, yeah.
Exactly. But his pack 1 was very good, and he ended up with an awesome deck. I really love this deck. I could beat him because I had a really fast red aggro deck, so... But his deck was awesome with... he had actually Survival, Squid Genesis, Pod, a lot of Planeswalkers. He was running only islands. Actually, we ran out of islands. Because he was playing Vedalken Shackles.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That can happen in the Worldknit decks.
Yes, exactly. I wasn't prepared for that. I thought with 40 islands was okay for 8-player draft, but I wasn't counting on the Worldknit.
Yeah.
So that actually happened. And yes, this deck was amazing. He had a lot of answers for everything, and he probably had...
Did he have any tutors?
Some of them, I think.
Yeah.
And he had, like, perhaps 5 cards that were kind of bad for his deck, but it was 5 cards in all the entire deck, so...
Yeah.
It was worth it, really.
Yeah, tutors in particular are absolutely crazy in Worldknit because, you know, you're not even restricted by the mana cost of what you ought to go and get.
Exactly.
So you can find something, anything literally is brilliant.
Yeah. So I think this is enough for today. Just to remind our audience, this was not the plan we had for today, but we are experiencing lots of problems with our internet connection and Skype. So we just had to cut the episode short. We will get back to discussing the artifact creatures, the artifact deck, probably, and the power cards, Moxen, Lotus, all that stuff. Maybe we'll try to find some guests for that episode, but mm-hmm. we could not discuss that today. At least we kept our promise. We discussed Butterskull and...
We got Skullclamp in as well.
And you got Skullclamp in. That was important. So, next time, it's a surprise. Haha. Probably. We'll just discuss some spoilers from Kinds of Tarkir or something.
I guess so.
Yes. So, let us know in the comments if you like this show. If there's anything we forgot, anything we might glanced over. Like we always say, all your feedback is welcome. And we have been trying to get the feedback you guys have been giving us, for the show.
Yeah, we've been trying to take everything to heart, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it's just, please shut up. I mean, we need to know. So, yeah. So, do you guys have anything else to add?
No, that's, I think we covered a lot of ground there.
Yes, yep. I think, even if we cut the episode short, it isn't that short as it might have been, so.
Yeah, you guys probably, a rule of thumb when recording podcasts is you should have half an hour for each co-host. And we usually ignore that, so sorry guys. if we will try to get some shorter episodes in the future as well. Until then, this is what, this episode will be short enough, we hope. So let us know if you like the show. And we hope to get you guys on board next time. Now we got to double digit episodes.
Yes.
I'm actually kind of proud of ourselves.
No, we've done okay. I mean, I wanted to do, it was a shame we couldn't cover powered and unpowered and, you know, and do a big sort of 10th episode, but we can maybe save that for number 100. Or the big number 11. We'll certainly do that episode soon. And if you guys have got any perspectives, from any of our listeners on aspects of this sort of powered, unpowered discussion that you'd like us to cover in particular, then, as Pedro says, just hit us up on Twitter, on our page on Mana Deprived. And, let us know your thoughts.
So it was nice talking to you as always.
And, it's been a pleasure.
I hope you guys from in the other side enjoyed the episode as well. We will be back, so see you guys.
Bye.
Yep. See you next episode and happy cubing.